If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Pixel Sift is proudly supported by Murdoch University School of Arts. Maybe you want to learn to make your own Twitch channel or podcast and outclass the competition. Does that sound good? Well, the skills you learn in a creative degree in games, sound, film, journalism will put you in a class of your own. Have a look at murdoch.edu.au/arts to learn more about what they've got on offer. That's murdoch.edu.au/arts, or you can search Murdoch University for more information. Murdoch University School of Arts, proudly supporting Pixel Sift. Hello, hello, and welcome to Pixel Sift. We're a video game site and podcast, and each and every episode we dig into the world of games. My name is Scott, and joining me tonight is my co-host, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Now, tonight, our guest is Matt Sanderson from Moloch Media. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Yes, Matt is here to talk about his recently released game, Mars Underground. But first of all, Sarah, what else are we talking about?
So today we're going to be talking about parents that are spending more and more money on their kids when it comes to video games. It's up quite a lot from last year and it's a bit of a trend. So we're going to find out how much it's increased and we'll also be discussing why that might.
All right. Well, let's get started.
Visit us on pixelsift.com.au.
So, parents in the US are spending more and more money on video games every year, presumably on their kids, according to a new survey from market intelligence firm Interpret. So, how much money is that? Well, on average, they spend about US$433 per year on video game content for kids, which is up 34% from last year, or year on year. So, what do you guys think? Just definitely come tell us in the comments, tell us in the chat. Are you spending more money or less money on yourselves or on your kids on video games? We'd love to know.
Yeah, I mean, as I get older and get in more of a comfortable monetary position, I think I'm spending more money on it, but only because of that factor alone. If anything, I probably purchase games a lot less these days, especially with the amount of awesome games that are available for free to play, such as, you know, the recent Apex and whatever else there. But yeah, what about yourself, Matt? Do you find yourself, do you spend more on money on games these days, or has it not changed at all?
I probably don't, less at the moment, probably because I just don't have time to play anything.
That's a huge factor, isn't it?
So that's also,
I mean, it's
even older.
Definitely. Like reading an article, you know, the big thing with games nowadays is a lot more games are pushing to be games as a service rather than games as a purchase or like a one-time buy. And what that generally means is instead of you just buying a game the one time and you getting a digital product, games as a service is more reflected in, say, free-to-play games or games where you buy it one time like Rainbow Six Siege, which is a paid purchase. But they keep adding on content. So year after year, instead of they making Rainbow Six Siege 2, they just add, here's a major content update. Here's some more playable characters. Overwatch does this. Fortnite, while being free-to-play, it also does this. It constantly trickles out content. You know, you keep getting a new season pass, new skins. The maps change. There's a new game mode. So a lot of, you know, competitor games are trying to do this. And I was reading an article from Kotaku on games as a service and how these things need to keep players engaged. I thought it was quite interesting because there's a huge amount of choice and competitor games at the moment, as well pointed out, and all of these games are constantly trying to charm people, whether that's children of parents or parents, gamers themselves, or even just people like us that may not have kids. They're all trying to compete for our time, and especially the older you are, the less time that you have that, you know, you games can compete with, which I thought was pretty interesting.
I mean, one of the huge ones for me is a gaming product that has become a service, and that, exactly like you said, it's basically the same thing every year, just like reskinned and blah, blah, blah. I mean, FIFA. It changes incrementally, ever so small, so smallly each year. But, you know, not only do people fork out quite a lot, because that's a huge title. You know, that's a $100 game, even if you're getting the basic on straight away on launch. But that model, the FIFA model, they earn over $800 million a year just from their ultimate team, which is their, you know, pay-as-you-go kind of microtransaction part. For a company to be earning almost $1 billion off of one game's kind of microtransactions that already brings in quite a lot of revenue is amazing. And EA are a big forefront in that. I think if you adjust for inflation, EA are making 30% less from the sale of actual games today and 280% more on microtransactions and season passes. And that's a shift from 2012 to 2017. So over 5 years that's happened. And that's
definitely,
it.
Definitely. I mean,
that's a profit. Sorry,
of
get one.
EA. Oh, sorry.
No, yeah, you go.
Speaking of EA and microtransactions, though, we did ask some people on our social media what they thought, were they spending more or less on games. And the Game Heart on Instagram had to say, probably less overall, but that's less to do with free to play and more to do with limited budget. Although I do have 70 hours in Apex Legends. And Apex Legends is a great example. It's just released its season pass. Which obviously is like a paid promotion thing, and it's obviously just the first of more to come. And it's, you know, a great example of how EA have started to do that. They're, you know, they're capitalizing on a much more successful monetization platform for their company, because unfortunately, under the capitalist kind of company structure, they have to grow. They have to keep getting more profit.
Right.
That's it. That's what I think. I mean, it's like, what were those numbers? Is it 30% down on the sales?
30% less
games
of sale of actual games, yeah, but 280% more on microtransactions.
Mm, those are extreme numbers.
That's
the way it works. They're going to just, yeah.
But that's the shift, though. Like,
microtransactions.
Yeah, but just because that's, you know, that's where the money's coming in from. But
that's their business, yeah.
There's a worry there, obviously, for, you know, them spending less time on actually making the games and being less worried about the actual games they're making and more so the revenues that they can pull in for that game.
Better games?
Well, does it? Or does it lead to axed games because there are, you know, the profit margin isn't going to meet FIFA Ultimate Team? I hate to bag on EA, but it's so easy. A few years ago when the Star Wars blah, blah, blah was happening, and everyone got really upset about the pay-to-win kind of system that Star Wars had implemented, the single-player game basically got axed because... And this is a bit of a hot take, but because it couldn't bring in the kind of revenue that they expected from their games, because FIFA set a precedent that cannot be met. Basically, it's the world
Absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely,
it's yeah. But that's what they're looking at. They're like, well, if this game can do this, why can't this game? And then
Definitely,
like that,
yeah.
That is looking at the industry in the wrong way completely. And to be fair, is why EA have such a bad rep and get such a tough time from people like myself.
Yeah. I mean, Ubisoft is a really interesting company, I found. BV14 on Discord had to say about whether he's spending more or less on games. He had to say less because I mostly play the same games. I play Rainbow Six Siege with him a lot. And you know, he still plays Rainbow Six Siege and CSGO, but he had to say that single-player games are expensive and the dollar-per-hour entertainment ratio is much lower, which I completely agree with on my personal experience. So he says he paid $30 for Rainbow Six Siege, which is pretty damn good.
That's cheap.
It's gone down over time because they've added more content and there's more paid promotions within the game, you have to understand. And he said he's got about 1,300 hours out of it and counting, but he played $30 for Dishonored 2, which is a very good game all the same, but he still only played about 40 hours or so. And I'm kind of in the same boat, I feel like. Like, I didn't pay very much for Siege, and I'm still playing it, but over time I keep paying more to be like, oh, new characters have come out, I'll pay a bit of money and I'll get those instantly, you know? And it's like, you know, maybe, I don't know, for me, I also find that, like, I gravitate more towards games that that have this kind of microtransaction structure to them, because they're games as a service. They keep fulfilling the thing of like, oh, new content.
And they need to, yeah.
Multiplayer as well. Like, do you find that as well? Like, I mean, I don't have the stats, but I have a feeling it's definitely something that multiplayer games tend to pull. Well, I love playing with my friends. Like, my game time is my social time, generally speaking, as well. I don't know about you guys.
You're 100% correct there. I mean, that's why my Star Wars example was good, because, you know, the multiplayer, you can do this sort of thing quite easily. But implementing a pay-to-go kind of microtransaction seasonal pass type thing is a lot harder if it's a single player, because the content needs to be there already and existing. And Activision Blizzard and even Ubisoft are really good examples of people. Like, they still, much like EA, earn more of their money, earn more of their revenue from microtransactions than actual games, but they have a really strong list of, you know, IP already to kind of draw upon, so it's not as big a deal. Whereas EA have really kind of wedged themselves into this ultimate team thing.
Definitely, yeah. Matt, do you have much experience playing any of these, you know, games as a service? Or do you like them? Do you hate them? You know, do you wish they didn't exist? Like, what's your thoughts on the whole thing?
It's not really something I've ever gotten into. I pretty much just play single player games when I do play games. For me, gaming was kind of about I guess my appeal, you know, like, I don't really do it as a social.
That's really interesting. That's absolutely fine. I completely get it. I felt there's been a huge shift between to multiplayer and online stuff over the last five plus years. I mean, it's undeniable, really. But there's still, you know, a huge part of the gaming community that haven't really jumped onto that, because it is, you know, as big as it is, it's still kind of bespoke and not what classic gaming is all about.
It's just never
crossed your path. Because the first time I really
many times
the first time I had to really forcefully get myself into loot boxes was Overwatch, and they don't do it in kind of like a threatening way, and I really liked that. It was a good entry for me, but I still don't love them, and I won't pay for them. As much as I love Apex, I haven't bought any loot boxes, and I won't be. If anything, if I was going to give my money to them, I'd buy Titanfall. If you have just tuned in, you are watching and or listening to Pixel Sift. We're talking about how parents are spending more money on games than they have in the past. Parents in the US on average are spending $433 per year on video game content for kids, which has increased 34% year on year. So that's specifically money they're spending on games as well, I should say. Like, the average amount of parents has spent on entertainment for their child in 2018 anyway was actually about $1,300, which is an increase of still like 25%. But that, you know, the main money is coming from excess spending on games, which, to be honest, I'm a little bit jealous of. I would have loved that extra 35% when I was a child.
As a game developer, Matt, and you've just released Mars Underground, obviously like a fantastic single player experience game. Yeah. Would you ever, if given the opportunity, be interested in working on a game as a games as a service, either by yourself or in a team? Does the thought, like, do you find that interesting?
Sure. I mean, it's still. Yeah, I mean, like, maybe these, that's not ultimate, like, passion around games is more the sort of single player experience. But I mean, yeah, I mean, you're still working on games. I mean, that's still dream sort of position for most people. That
would that be something you'd be willing to pursue to increase the longevity of a game, or to increase even the popularity of a game, if you can introduce that, like, we haven't quite got to talking about it yet, but say if you could introduce something microtransaction-ish, transactional to Mars Underground without kind of taking away from the play, would that be something you'd be willing to do?
I'm not sure that I could really see a way that would work with this particular game.
Yeah, that's understandable.
I mean, perhaps something in that formula, you know, the time loop kind of. Maybe I'm thinking about it now, like a way you could sort of have content that you could keep, you know, releasing.
I'm sure it means a lot more work.
I'm not really opposed to anything, yeah.
Yeah, no worries. That way, so we did put out the question to Facebook and to the social media ether. Are you spending more or less on games these days is what we asked. Sarah did read out one from the Game Hype before. We also had a couple more. Alex Costa on Instagram says this, they're thinking they spend about the same. Yoss on Facebook says, as I find as I get older, I am being very selective with my games and what game publishers I support on ethical or moral decisions the company makes. As an example, I don't buy any Konami games, just how they treated Hideo Kojima in his last years at the company. Any developer that shows love and respect to me as a consumer with decent content will get to have my patronage. Berio Pokemob on Discord says, more, definitely spending more, because I actually have the money to spend on it now. I've recently been having the urge to collect my childhood games, so I'd say older games and even some retro cartridges to complete my Pokemon collection. I don't really buy new games often, at least for myself. And Classic Squint on Discord also says, it depends on how recent these days mean. In the last few years, more easily. In the last 6 months, less. Recent releases have been more underwhelming than usual, and with the recent AAA flops, it has made me more likely to wait for a sale. I mean, I kind of sort of agree with all of those. Everybody's right in their own respect there.
I think...
No, please, go on.
Is I guess maybe how people feel about because one person in there was mentioning that we're getting into buying retro games and cartridges and when I spend some money on and I buy like a physical, it's a real object, like as opposed to spending the same amount of money on a new character or something, you know, like microtransactions. That sort of feels like, it just feels like better value. Like,
no, I completely get what you want.
Buying like a real
thing. You're not getting a tangible product. You're buying something that's perking up something that already exists. Yeah, and to be honest, if the game turns off or goes away, so does all of your, whatever assets.
Absolutely starting to see more companies invest into streaming games as well. I think it's called Stadia by Google. That was a recent announcement yesterday. Yeah,
absolutely.
I personally think it's going to flop because the amount of internet that it requires is absurd. And if they really think that they're going to get enough of an audience with the kind of requirements for game streaming with a 10 millisecond input delay, I can't see it happening. We're starting to see like that was a big announcement. And the big thing with that is you're not even getting to own the game. So we've moved from manufacturer of physical cartridges and discs to, you buy a game installed, it's a digital download, it's saved to your account, saved to your digital library. And now we're not even seeing that anymore. Like that's disappearing too. Mm. Like, I mean, I don't think that these games as a streaming service are going to really take off just because the tech isn't there yet. Frankly, but
especially not in Australia.
Absolutely. And it's kind of scary to me. Like it's really targeted only at like the I guess the highest most I guess I don't want to say richest, but I can't think of the right word.
But technologically forward,
high quality internet that are closest to the data services. And not Australia. They're targeting a small percent. Yeah, absolutely not us. It's not even Australia. They're Australians have shit internet. But the big thing is it's like we're potentially even going to see our libraries disappear. Now, I don't know about either of you, but I very much value the games that I own in my Steam library, and it would break my heart if I lost my account or if I wasn't able to kind of, even though it's digital, I still, especially when it comes to indie games or by companies that I have a great fondness for, I would be very upset if I wasn't able to make a direct purchase to them, even if it was only digital, because, you know what you're buying into. You're buying into this economy of video game creators and you're supporting creators. And to lose that would be, I think, quite scary. So with the uprising of potential streaming services, I it's kind of a scary thought that we might not even actually be able to own games. Instead of games as a service moving into games as a constant streaming source of income, that quite honestly scares me.
That is very scary indeed. And look, with the huge AAA profits that they're getting from these games, I don't think this games as a service model is going anywhere fast. But with flops such as I mentioned, the Star Wars debacle, it's obviously that developers can stuff it up. So they need to be careful going forward. Hopefully, we see new emerging ways of developing upon this service as a model effort. So model so that effort can still go into continue to bring better games at the same time as appeasing this need for revenue shift. Because after all, it's the games that matter to us, not the money. And with that, let's get to the next section.
Hey there, if you're enjoying the show and you want to hear more, subscribe to Pixel Sift on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, or listen on pixelsift.com.au. See you there.
We will indeed see you there. It's time for the second half of the show where we do the interview. Today we have Matt Sanderson, who's a designer, developer, programmer, and music from Mars Underground. Welcome, Matt, again. Thanks for coming along. Do you want to give the people at home a little bit of an explanation of what Mars Underground is?
Well, I describe it as an apocalyptic time loop adventure game. So you're stuck in a time loop and you're sort of trying to figure out what's going on. And every time loop, you're discovering new things and you're picking up items and yeah.
So where did inspiration for the game come from?
Movie Groundhog Day.
Very well.
And I remember there was this theater and they do these movies recreated as like 8-bit, 16-bit video games, like what they'd look like. And they did one of Donnie Darko, and I kind of liked that as well. And that was also sort of one of the interesting. There's all these like time loop sort of TV shows and things on Netflix at the moment. There's been a few people like, oh, it's like, was it Russian Doll? And
do you have any major inspirations going into the construction of it? Like any particular games or... Like, you know, I mean, obviously people have like likened it to Groundhog Day a lot, but for me, when I looked at some footage and gameplay, I immediately thought of like Mother 3.
Yeah, well, Earthbound, yeah, absolutely, one of the inspirations. And, you know, I think also for me, I think Monkey Island, that was kind of like the game that made me want to make games.
So you mentioned Monkey Island there. What was it about Monkey Island that made you want to make games?
It'd be the dialogue choices, the conversation tree stuff, really. I think, yeah, like that was Monkey Island 2, I think, and remember. But like you go in and you talk to like there's the guy and you have this ridiculous conversation with him and you're like, you know, you're like part of the sort of the comedy that's happening and it's just like that was the first time like that I saw that sort of thing in a game and that was just like big enthusiast of dialogue.
So it's the game has been out for a week or so. How has been the reception so far?
Reception's been good. Reviews. The people who played it, they've all seem to have liked it. Well received so far. I haven't had any negative reviews on Steam or anywhere. So,
which is nice. So how was the PAX experience for you, having a game a few months before launch?
It was really pretty amazing to be, you know, right there in the center of it all. You know, I don't think I've ever gone to a convention that big before. I haven't gone to PAX before, certainly. So it's just, you know, just so many people and it's like, oh, you know.
I also noticed the soundtrack, which I'm really enjoying so far, is available for purchase on Steam. And it mentions, on Steam. And it mentions the game has a dynamic music soundtrack.
Right.
So what's all that about? Did you do the music yourself?
I had a little bit of help. A friend sort of did a bit of the music. I did do most of the music. And as far as like the dynamic, sort of crossfading between tracks. So sort of there's an area, Phobos Central, and as you walk into the different stores and things, it crossfades to sort of like a different arrangement of the kind of the music in the area. So
yeah, beautiful
stuff like that.
That must be pretty difficult.
Oh, sorry.
taken on so many hats, like, you know, as I said at the start of the show, you know, designer, developer, programmer, music. How do you balance so many different tasks all at once?
I think just dumb ambition. Like, I don't know how I did it. I guess that's why it took so long. Like, I didn't realize it was going to take over 3 years mm-hmm. when I started on it, and that it'd be sort of consume me so completely.
You know. Did you have a particular process? Like, did you bounce between doing different stages? Like, one day did you maybe work on music for an area, or did you purely focus on like art for a while first? Like, what was your process for, mm-hmm. I guess, you know, constructing the game, wearing all those hats?
Oh, you know, what do I feel like doing today, really? And in some ways, like that, I'm sick of doing this sort of part of the game. Like, well, I'll write a song, you know, for it. I'll write some music for this area. So, you know, like, yeah, like in a way, like doing all these different roles is kind of,
it's almost freedom there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. Like,
you know, would you ever consider doing it again? Like, would you make another game by yourself, fulfilling all those roles?
I'd like to.
There's no commitment to that. I like to. Will
I'd
I?
Like to, I guess like you know, like, this is a serious thing, and I'm going to sell it, and you kind of, you know, like, you, I kind of come to the end of it, and I put it up for sale, and you kind of go, well, if I go, like, I say, you know, I've spent 5,000 plus hours on it, you know, like, I'm not really going to make,
not going to recoup expenses, yeah, it. Right,
and it's sort of like, it's kind of like doing another game. And by myself and how I want and everything, it's like, well, can I get away with spending that much of my time, you know, as an adult with responsibilities?
Yeah, right.
Invest 5,000 hours into pet project.
I mean, do you feel like it was worth it? Do you feel accomplished by releasing this, even though you did spend lots of hours from it?
I'm proud of it. I'm really proud of it. Yeah,
that's great. Yeah. I mean, if as far as arts go, that's kind of the reason you do it. And if you can do it for those reasons. Yeah. Well, we're very glad you did, because it's a great looking game, and I hope the launch continues to go very well. So if people do want to follow anything that you are doing in the future, where can they? Where's the best place to find you?
It'll definitely be on www.molochmedia.com. Site there, or the Mars Underground page on Facebook or Twitter. That'd be a place to find me.
Fantastic. And as I said, it is available on Steam at the moment. It's even got a bit of a 10% discount if you want to jump on and get some savings. We are on our way out. Big thanks to Matt again. Do go and check out Mars Underground on Steam. This episode has been hosted by myself and Sarah. It was produced by Fiona Bartholomeus and Mitch Lowe. The executive producer was Gianni Gigiovanni. And we wouldn't have been able to make it to 170 episodes of Pixel Sift if we didn't have the support of Murdoch University. Check them out and tell them we sent you. If you're keen to learn more about a great creative degree, head to murdoch.edu.au/arts. As always, we'll be sticking links to topics we've talked about in the show notes on our website, www.pixelsift.com.au. Come join us on Discord. We'd love to have you there. That's pixelsift.com/Discord, where you can share your creative work. If you'd like to know what we do, if you like what we do, please tell a friend. We don't pay to advertise. We rely on word of mouth for people to find the show. And that's about all. Big love. Woo! Catch y'all later.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.